Well, welcome. Today it's the 13th of March, and we are on our second day of our business article, where we are discussing Microsoft's CEO and the book that he wrote that gives us some looks behind the curtain of Microsoft's culture in his book, Hit Refresh. And my name is Linda. I'm so happy that you can join us today. And I have two gentlemen with me in the studio today.
Hello, everyone. This is Josh, and I'm very glad to be back talking about another great article in our Advance magazine.
What do you want to tell us about that we discussed yesterday in the article?
So yesterday we discussed the book Hit Refresh, and we had talked about how it was by turns an official history of Microsoft, but also a memoir and a rumination. But what I really enjoyed was this image of it being a frank picture, so a very honest depiction without trying to make it look better than it is of what was going wrong in the corporate culture in Microsoft at the time when he was chosen to be the new CEO.
Yeah, hopefully it can be a learning experience for other people in this position and other companies that be finding themselves in the same kind of position. Well, thanks, Josh. And also we have
Simon. It's nice to be back, especially learning about something you don't always think about too much. I'd become used to not thinking too much about what was going on in Microsoft, and so I didn't realize that things had become very hierarchical and there was such a strict pecking order there. I guess because the company was sliding into irrelevance. Those are all terms we used yesterday, right? Becoming less and less fitting for what's happening in current trends.
Right.
But things have changed, and things have been turned around by this CEO.
Well, I like that you brought in a lot of the vocabulary we were talking about yesterday. One of my favorites is pecking order. Actually, where it came from is, Simon, do you want to review that? Because you are from a farming area.
Well, it's from chickens, because the biggest, most powerful chickens kind of push the other ones out of the way and eat first. And so you know where you fit in the hierarchy based on when you get to peck the seeds to eat.
Okay. Yeah. So they get the fattest, most nutritious seeds. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we are on page 23 in your magazine. So if you have it with you, you might want to open it to the page so you can follow along as we read and discuss it. And if you have a digital device, maybe you want to find the article so that you also can follow along. And we're going to do this first reading. We have a short section on the left-hand column at the top of the page on page 23. So let's take a look at that.
Uneasy change. His first priority after saying yes was to rally the troops and revitalize the culture that had taken Microsoft to the top of the technology world in the 1990s. Starting with Microsoft's top leaders, Nadella prodded employees to be humble, curious, and inquisitive. Envy of the success of others, Nadella writes, is a poor reason to build a product. A line that would seem to indict Microsoft's efforts to match Apple's success in music players or the iPhone with few new ideas. Nadella writes that he was met with some resistance when, as an up-and-coming executive, he tried to change the direction of Microsoft's server and tools unit, an effort that would sow the seeds for Microsoft's cloud computing revival. Later, as he built a new executive team, some longtime executives were sent packing.
So we see that the title of this little section is called Uneasy Change. So they were not really looking forward to change, were they?
No, and when you say that something is uneasy, it can both mean uncomfortable as well as sort of unwilling.
Right. So it seems a little bit of both in this situation, just from what we can tell. So he has his priorities set already. It says his first priority was to rally the troops and revitalize the culture that had taken Microsoft to the top of the technology world in the 90s. So if you're rallying the troops, this really actually comes from the Army, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, we talked yesterday about how people at Microsoft had become demoralized or depressed and kind of sad or negative, kind of hopeless even.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is that he wants all of the staff to be focused and encouraged and feeling very positive about the different things that they're going to do. And then he goes on to revitalize the culture. And he mentions that that culture had at one point been very successful because it had taken Microsoft to the top of the technology world in the 1990s. But again, as we said yesterday, that culture had sort of become a little different, a little broken, and wasn't quite working as well. It was very political and people weren't really working together.
Right. It sounds like they were all out for themselves and very protective of themselves, especially if we go back and look at what they said yesterday about going to meetings. They were all trying to prove that they were the smartest person in the room. And that sounds very protective to me of, you know, you don't have a learning, you know, kind of spirit about you. So you'd want things to stay the way that they are, or you want to do it my way. But here he started with the top leaders at Microsoft, and he prodded them, okay? This actually comes from, like, cows. When you try to get cows to move, they have cattle prods, or to prod somebody means to get them to move or to do something, right?
Yeah, so you poke them, so you use a little bit of force in order to get someone to move in a direction that you want, and that was part of his effort to revitalize the culture or renew or re-energize the culture by getting the top leaders, so the people at the top of the hierarchy, which was so important in Microsoft's culture before, to become more humble, curious, and inquisitive. So to change the corporate culture from the top down.
Right. And we have this word, well, I think we all know what humble means and curious. I thought this was a very interesting choice of adjectives here to describe them. He wants them to be these, which means like they must have been the opposite, right? They must have been proud. They didn't, you know, they wanted to do things their way, and they didn't really care to find out anything new, and inquisitive. And this word inquisitive is a little bit different than curious. Curious means you want to know something about something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But inquisitive means that you want to discover as much as you can about something.
Yeah, that's right. And actually in the vocabulary focus, the definition they add to that, they say sometimes in a way that annoys people.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's pretty interesting.
I suppose you might think about the kid in class who keeps asking questions, you know,
mm-hmm.
or
why?
Keeps trying to answer
why?
All of the questions.
Yeah,
right?
That, mm-hmm. That word comes to mind, you know, when you have a child that always goes, why?
Why?
They want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It can be very annoying. But here, I think, you know, he really wanted them to get with it, right? To move. Because they are at a standstill, really. They're not going anywhere. I thought this next paragraph was very interesting. He's talking about envy of the success of others, right, Josh?
Yeah, so here he's writing in his book that the envy of the success of others, or the being jealous or envious of what other people do that are successful, is a poor reason to build a product, which is a line that would seem to indict Microsoft's effort to match Apple's successes in a couple of different things, right? Music players, iPhones, new ideas.
Yeah, that's right. And that's actually, those are some of my strongest memories of Microsoft. A few years ago, things like the Microsoft phone, like they bought Nokia, right, to try to get into the phone world, and it was just kind of sad and didn't really work very well, right? And so...
Well, it wasn't their field of expertise, so they just thought, okay, you know, let's just get into this without really knowing what they were doing.
Well, yeah, but like they say here, that's their reason for building the product is envy of the success
right.
of others, so... Mm. Apple's done really well with the iPhone, and they say, oh, well, we better get into phones.
Or MP3 players, because Apple is also wildly successful with MP3 players. And the Microsoft designed MP3 player. Did not go over very well, but they also tried to bring it out at a time when really the iPhone was taking over the MP3 player, so it stopped even being a thing, and they were trying to copy a thing that wasn't a thing anymore.
I don't even remember the Microsoft music players.
And for good reason.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I believe there was the Zune.
Condemned right there. Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened when he tried to change the direction? That seemed like Microsoft wanted to go in this direction, and then he was met with some resistance, right? So they didn't really want to change, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the idea. So if people are resisting you, it means they're kind of working against you or at least not helping you out. And it says he was receiving resistance because he was an up-and-coming executive. So the idea being he was sort of newer than maybe some of the other people who were there, and he was moving up more quickly. And so when you think about that political environment we talked about yesterday, you think maybe people were sort of jealous. And so this resistance came out when he tried to change the direction of one of Microsoft's units.
Right. And, yeah, this is a very good, adjective we have here, up-and-coming executive, as you said, Simon. If you can use that in a lot of different situations, can't you, Josh? Up-and-coming?
Yeah, you can. And I think also it's important that you understand that because of the politics of the culture, mm-hmm. that usually when you're in a very hierarchical culture, it's the up-and-coming people, so the people who are showing a lot of promise, maybe being innovative or creative. But when you're in a hierarchy that does not want to, so if you're someone's supervisor and you don't want to lose your position, then you end up doing whatever you can in order to stop these up-and-coming employees from being successful because you're worried about your own job.
Yeah. Well, we see what happened to them. So as Simon said, he tried to change the direction of Microsoft's server and tools unit. So that's where these products must have been coming out of. An effort that would sow the seeds for Microsoft's cloud computing revival. If you sow this, okay, going back to farming terms again, if you're sowing seeds, what are you doing, Josh?
Well, this is a way that we refer to planting seeds.
Okay. So.
So in business, when you're sowing seeds, what you're doing is you're sort of starting the project out. You're, another phrase we use is laying the groundwork. So you're basically putting all of the things in position and starting all the things that you will need later in order to produce this product and this idea and bring it to reality.
Okay, and here we're talking about cloud computing, which certainly is what we think of now when we think of Microsoft. And it is a revival. So I think they started in this kind of area a little bit before, but now they're really pushing it, and it's developed quite a bit. Well, we see that he built a new executive team, which I don't think was very easy to do at Microsoft because, you know, the way that the corporation was set up being very hierarchical. There was a lot of power at the top. And what happened to some people?
Well, he dealt with the difficulties with the power at the top by sending those long time, or the people who have been working there for a long time, executives packing.
Okay.
So when you send someone packing, basically you say you need to pack up your things and leave. So it's another way of saying he fired them.
Right. Not easy to do, I don't think, especially in this kind of a corporate culture.
There, at this level, there's a lot of decisions that go into that kind of thing. Usually mm-hmm. there is a compensation for
right.
being let go outside of your contract. And so there's also you need to get clearance in order to make sure that it's okay to spend the money to fire some of these executives.
But yeah, and I'm sure that this was all done at the board level as well because he doesn't have that kind of power.
At this point, you would definitely need board approval in order to be able to do those sort of things.
Right. So we can see that this is a very fitting subtitle, Uneasy Change. There are a lot of changes talked about in this first section right here. You know, he basically took away what the direction that they were trying to go in, which was a direct competition with Apple, which was not successful anyway, and turned it around and brought it into the Microsoft's cloud computing revival. He revived that, and he has a whole new executive team. So usually that does happen when new CEOs take over, doesn't it? You know, you don't always keep the existing people because they probably don't have the same vision as you do.
I think it's fairly common when you have brand new top management, executive management, that they will, you know, value certain people that have experience, but they also want to work with a team that will be more in line with their vision. And so usually there's what they call a little bit of cleaning of house. Right?
Another good term.
Yeah, which means you're kind of getting rid of some of the old things in order to make room for the new things.
Okay. Well, let's take a look now. We are in the middle of page 23 in the left-hand column, and we're going to find out about some of Nadella's philosophies.
Nadella's philosophies. He finds it difficult to write about himself, admitting more comfort in explaining technology trends and philosophy, topics he dwells on at length in the second half of the book. Superfast quantum computing? Coming soon. Artificial intelligence? Also coming, but with a note of caution. Nadella doesn't traffic in absolutes and dismisses the debates in the popular press that hold artificial intelligence will either destroy or perfect civilization. Instead, he strikes a cautious balance, saying technology has a history of amplifying humanity's capabilities, not replacing them wholesale. But he calls for an explicit ethical code built into software and machines to amplify the best in humanity and avoid technology's tendency for control. And in a contrast to the caricature of Silicon Valley pundits who project all-knowing invincibility, Nadella is explicit that other corners of society and the globe must help design those systems. The tech industry should not dictate the values and virtues of this future, he writes. Another lesson Nadella took from Microsoft's stagnation and subsequent revival: no one should go it alone.
Well, we're looking at several of his philosophies. And does he like to write about himself, Simon?
Well, it says he doesn't. And so it goes on to talk about how he likes to explain technology trends and philosophy. And that really fits with what we read about the book on the first day. We sort of read that it was a semi-official history of Microsoft. So that's not really too much about him. But we did read it was also a memoir, so it was sort of his perspective on what had been happening. But then it also told us it was a rumination on technology and technology trends, and that's really what we're seeing here, where it explains that he's talking about technology trends and philosophy, and those are topics he dwells on at length in the second half of the book, so topics he really focuses on and talks about a lot.
Okay. We see here that the first question he asks in the next paragraph is superfast quantum computing. So when we're talking about quantum computing, Josh, what are we talking about?
So this is an area of computing that is supposed to be the next level as far as speed goes, the way to process information. So right now we use binary computing, which means that our computer processors think of things in terms of on or off or one state or another, where quantum computing uses subatomic particles for storing information as well as being able to recognize multiple states at the same time. So what it really boils down into is a jump in the way that we process information and store it in order to really increase both capacity and speed.
Okay. So have they introduced these yet?
It is still, it's beyond a theoretical model, but it is certainly not something that's going to be showing up in our iPhones next year.
Okay.
And that's what he sort of suggests here. He says it's coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
So not yet, but at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the same thing about artificial intelligence, which of course is just sort of this idea of computers, seeming like they're thinking, mimicking thinking. And then because they're doing that, being able to do all kinds of thinking jobs that people normally do.
Well, he says that's also coming, but there's a note of caution with it, right?
Yeah, he gives a note of caution. He says he doesn't traffic in absolutes, which means he doesn't say anything is certain or for sure.
Right. There's no yes or no here.
That's right. And he dismisses the debates in the popular press. So when you dismiss something, you say it's either not right or it's not important. And those debates in the popular press are holding or saying that artificial intelligence will either destroy or perfect civilization.
And that would be the absolutes that he says that he does not buy into or does not traffic.
It has to be one or the other, and
right.
He's not taking a side here, it sounds like. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, but what does he do? It's kind of interesting. It says that he strikes a cautious balance. And what does that mean, Josh?
Well, when you strike a balance or you hit a balance, it means that you are really kind of like arriving at or achieving this balance between the technology having a history of amplifying humanity's capabilities but not replacing them wholesale. So again, we're kind of talking about these absolutes of either saving everything or making everything better or destroying everything or making everything worse. And so his balance that he strikes is saying that this artificial intelligence or this computing will be able to maybe amplify some of our capabilities but will not replace everything.
Wholesale. That's a key word. You will hear this. You'll hear people say this, right? If you not replace them wholesale means completely, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I was going to add that he mentions that technology has a history of doing this. And so you can think back to my youth when computers were becoming much, much more common, like everyone had a computer. And people were talking about how all of these people were going to end up unemployed and be replaced by computers. But that didn't really happen. Instead, it just sort of changed the way people worked.
Yeah, I've heard debates about this artificial intelligence on the news recently. You know, they're talking about is it going to replace even tea picking in Sri Lanka? And will it make people there lose their jobs? So it's kind of this all or nothing approach still. So we'll see. I mean, I agree with him. You know, we kind of have to wait and see what's going to happen or how it's going to develop. But he is very interesting. It says he calls for an explicit ethical code built into software and machines to amplify the best in humanity and avoid technology's tendency for control.
So here he's talking about an explicit code, so something that's written out very clearly and is very easy to understand, that is built into the software machines to amplify the best in humanity. So people who talk in circles about the dangers of technology and especially artificial intelligence, there's been a long discussion about building in the code in order to ensure that these new developments will always be focused towards humanity's best interest and there will be no danger of things going into the realm of science fiction, meaning that the machines take over and kill every last person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we see that at the top of the page, on page 23, we see in a contrast to the caricature of Silicon Valley pundits who project all-knowing invincibility. Okay, that's kind of a mouthful right there.
We've actually used this word before in the article, caricature.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it means is it's kind of like an illustrated version. Like if you think of a political comic or something in a newspaper, it's an exaggerated version of something. And so when you think about a caricature of Silicon Valley, you might think about sort of a computer geek guy who hides in his room all the time and just types. Or you might think about somebody who's more like Steve Jobs and kind of obsessed with design. These are really kind of stereotypes that are shown as examples of things.
And you usually find those in caricatures, right?
That's right. Well, that's really what a caricature is.
Mm-hmm.
And so here he's saying in contrast, so different from or compared to, these sort of stereotypical Silicon Valley pundits. And so that word pundit, that's also an interesting word. It's a person who knows a lot about something, and then they talk about it. So these are the kinds of people you see on, you know, talk shows giving their opinions on different things. And here it describes that caricature of Silicon Valley pundits as being all-knowing and invincible, or at least seeming that way. But again here, we're talking about being in contrast to these people who seem like they know everything and come from Silicon Valley. And it tells us that's Nadella.
Okay, and how does it describe him, Josh?
Well, so he's still talking about this sort of explicit ethical code that's built in and saying that other corners of society in the globe must help design these systems. So it can't just be these pundits or these people who are, you know, considered to be experts in their field from Silicon Valley. Simon had a really good explanation of what a pundit is.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that we use to refer to pundits, and that is the talking head.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Simon had mentioned on the talk shows where you'll get these people who come on because they're supposedly experts talking about a certain subject or a field, but we'll see them in news shows, and it's just the picture of the head that is talking or giving their opinion. We tend to now, because we call them talking heads, to give them a little bit less weight and authority. And now, especially in this day and age, when we talk about the problems that they have in the media and the 24-hour news cycle, that there's a lot of people giving their opinions, but they really aren't extremely valuable anymore. And I think that's what he's getting at here about being explicit that other corners of society, not just these talking heads or these self-proclaimed experts, need to be involved designing these systems that are coming up in new technology.
Yeah, otherwise he goes on to say that the tech industry is going to define or dictate our values and the virtues of the future, and he doesn't want to put it there.
Yeah, so if you were to give a quick summary of this, in the last paragraph he said we needed an ethical code that was built into all of these new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And in this paragraph he's saying, the smart people of Silicon Valley can't make this code. Instead, all of us from around the world need to help design it together.
Right. So that's one of the lessons that he learned, and another one that he took from Microsoft, stagnation. If something is stagnant, it just means it's at a stalemate. It just stays there. There's nothing fresh coming out of it. And subsequent revival is that no one should go it alone. I think I could agree with that phrase, no one should go it alone. What do you guys think?
Sure.
Especially when it comes to being innovative and creative.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we hope that you have enjoyed our business article and this look at Microsoft and kind of the revival that it's going through. And we hope that it has a lot to offer in the future. It certainly is developing cloud computing, which is on the tip of everybody's tongue now. And we look forward to see what it has to offer in the field of artificial intelligence and quantum computing as well. And we hope that you will join us again here on Advanced Radio. Bye for now.
Goodbye. Goodbye.